honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by the U.S. Army. Find your place on the Army team at goarmy.com/warriors.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. Our guest today is Stan Filgus, 93 years old, of Fresno, California. He won't turn 94 until Pearl Harbor Day. It was his 16th birthday when Japan's surprise attack occurred. Before he was 17, he had already enlisted in the Navy, leaving Fresno's Roosevelt High School, where he'd been a section champion in football and a star in the 100 and 200 meters on the track, before he had the chance to graduate with the class of 1943. They told him they'd mail him a diploma. But it would take, believe it or not, 70 years before he received that. He did receive quite an education at sea on the destroyer USS Wedderburn, which earned 7 battle stars in the Pacific. We're going to hear about a close call with a kamikaze in a moment. But first, let's hear about the only injury he sustained aboard the Wedderburn. Believe it or not, it had nothing to do with combat.
At the indoctrination speech, we were standing and officer came in and he said, sit down, and the guy behind me pulled a chair out. My tailbone hit the spine, like, left a lump. That was a real struggle to get rid of that because the lump would swell up. They'd slash it and it would not heal. I had that about 4 times. And finally, they discharged me. They sent me to Oak Knoll Naval Hospital. This guy I had was a specialist. That was his specialty. The rear end admiral, they called him. but he did fix it. That wasn't a real painful thing, but it was a nuisance. That foolishness of that guy pulling that chair, they sounded like it was nothing, but I could have wrung his neck every time I had trouble with that.
That's what I was going to ask. What'd you do to the guy who pulled the chair out from under you?
Well, they all laughed like hell and ha ha ha. It left a knob right on the spine.
Do you remember when you first understood what a kamikaze was, or this was something that you guys had to worry about and deal with?
Oh, when that came up, one of the Japanese hit a cruiser. It did a tremendous damage to it. They said that the guy flew it on purpose. That's the start of the kamikaze. He says, what the hell kind of people are these? They'll fly into you. When are they going to stop that stuff? And how? And it did. It was a big factor. That wasn't a joke. When they fly into you, that you do everything you can to not let them hit you.
Was it at Okinawa, maybe, where you told me you thought a kamikaze was coming straight down at your ship?
Yeah, that was Okinawa. It was in the evening. We'd heard reports of ships being run into kamikaze. We were on a radar picket. The radio man said, boy, we've been lucky today. They really hit those destroyers. Really? Man, we've been lucky today. And no sooner did that happen, when 2 planes came from Okinawa, fast planes. They were Georges. They named them after people, George. And they were fast. And the people that were protecting us there were making figure eights. So they sent the 4 planes after the 2. And on the other end of it, another blip comes up on the dang thing. And it's a plane. We opened fire on it, and it just kept coming, and it didn't take very long, and it was there. So he went to his dive, and our captain knew that on a vertical target, at a certain point, he can't change. He got to that point. The captain maneuvered it to where he couldn't change the dive part. Horizontal, those are worse. So he was going to miss us, and he made that run at it. It was crucial.
And where were you while that was happening?
In the gun. It looked like it was going to hit us, and I was scared. And it didn't hit, and I took a couple steps to get out of the gun, and my knee buckled. So I thought, chicken. Oh, scary cat. So I went to my friend Tommy in the next gun. I said, "Tommy, were you scared?" He said he looked like he was coming down my barrel. He says, "Anybody tells you they're not afraid is a liar." So that helped me.
You felt a little better about being weak in the knees?
Yeah, that I was a chicken after all. It looked like I was the end of the world. And we never saw that plane after that trial to come back and try again. We never saw it.
So he was diving. The two planes coming in had been chased off by the four American planes protecting the fleet. Yeah. But then this other plane came in. He was diving on you, but because the ship moved, he had to pull up and take off.
That's what happened. He realized he was going to miss, and he, right off the water, he started gaining altitude. That's where that last time we saw it. All of us thought he was going to be successful, but our captain did a great job. He was an Airedale. You know what an Airedale is? And a blimp man. And we got him from the East Coast. And our first captain had a kind of a nervous breakdown, and he couldn't function good. So they got that blimp guy, and he knew what he was doing when he time to make his move. They wouldn't hit us. It was a close call. When you have a dangerous situation, it keeps you wondering sometimes, how about me?
What do you think would have happened to you if your captain didn't do that?
Well, kamikaze guy is very dangerous. So strong for the country that is something to be concerned about.
Because he can drop a bomb, for one, and then his plane's going to explode. There could be secondary explosions. Do you think you'd still be here if your captain hadn't dodged him?
Well, that's a thought. And as time went on with us escaping that dive, we really lucked out on that thing. When looking down that barrel, he looked like he was coming right in. That was a point in my life that, man, you got a, they called it the rabbit's foot destroyer. And I was on it. They had the amount of miles we made in a danger area, and the planes we shot down, we were in a lot of those to be called a rabbit's foot destroyer. That was the place where I escaped situations, and we got through them. And you could only get so confident for so long. So we had a reputation of being lucky. We didn't lose a man, none. Of all these thousands of miles that they have on paperwork, it was lucky.
Are there some other moments that you think back on and you say, boy, that could have been me? And there's some kids and grandkids and great-grandkids who wouldn't be here?
Yeah, well, in those air battles, it is on your mind that this is intense. And when they're going to fly into you, that's pretty serious. If they're going to fly their plane into you.
I saw another note about your ship that in May of 45, you had a pretty important admiral on your ship and yeah. Had to take him from Guam to Okinawa.
Yeah.
Was there a buzz on the ship when Bull Halsey came aboard?
Oh, yeah. Bull Halsey was a fighter, no matter what. He made a mistake on following that typhoon, but he didn't do it on purpose, but he followed with the typhoon. They had a hearing about that. They exonerated him.
Yeah, and they also changed the way they did things, and they started a program to fly planes into typhoons to take measurements so they could predict the weather better so they wouldn't have another tragedy like that.
Stuff. It was we're going this way, I think this. It was just following the storm.
Well, what was it? Was it a big deal to your crew to have him aboard your ship?
Yes, it was. They all liked Halsey. Halsey was, he had an attitude of, we got to keep going. We can't stop. We've got to work it out. When he got in charge of that task force, that was a good move.
You're out there for months and months and months. As time goes by, did you ever find yourself wondering, hey, is this ever going to end? What's going to happen here? Was there some uncertainty that you had to deal with?
We were making headway, but we had to make up time. We finally got to where we had enough planes to protect us. That's the way it went. They chose the battleships. We chose the air. And we were right. And when finally the war was over, the first thing I said, I made it to myself or out loud.
What kind of welcome did you have when you made it back to the States?
We were supposed to go to San Diego. On the way there, they changed it to Washington. We got there, welcome home sign was hanging in the water. They'd already had their time.
When you say hanging in the water, you mean it had been on display and now it had fallen and you couldn't even read it all?
Like hooked on a building on the dock. Yeah. And the thing was hanging down. They said they already celebrated. It was kind of like they don't even care. We made comment on that. What the hell? But that's the way it turned out.
What about getting back here to Fresno? What was that like to see your family again?
That was a relief. My mom was very relieved that I made it. The mothers are. And my dad was proud. We went on going from hardwood floors to carpet. And we made a carpet store. It was a relief to say that I made it. And when I went on that honor flight, that's the first thought that I had was, how come that I made it? Doing the same things these other guys are doing, and they got trouble.
Well, you're talking about the honor flight, and it's been a few years now, but you got to share that experience with your brother. Yeah. You both went on the flight, and you're saying that when you were there at the World War II Memorial, looking at the gold stars that represent 406,000 Americans who died in the war, that was the thought going through your mind? Why wasn't I one of those?
That's exactly right. I survived situations that were serious, and it didn't get me.
What was the best part of that honor flight experience for you?
The best part was the electricity of being there in that flight is not like taking a picture. It has electric to it. There's a certain feeling that you got there. I had on that flight, there was a guy in the plane, the seat next to us, and he wasn't a Navy man. He says, what's this Navy man destroyers, tin cans? And I explained it to him. I said, how do you know that? I says, because I am one of those special people. I told him the way I thought about it. Yeah, they are special. The destroyer men, they got the accolades for being what they were. They were the little boys that played big. That flight was really exceptional for me.
Well, and I don't want to forget to ask about this high school diploma, because your principal promised you, hey, you guys leave now, we'll mail you the diploma. How long did it take for the mail to get to you?
Someone brought it to me.
But it took a few years.
Yes.
Like about 70 years?
A long time. And it was a really nice diploma. It said, once a writer, always a writer. It was a kind of a handmade diploma. It had everything nice. I got mine. My buddy Zach Carr didn't get one. He got killed.
Can you tell us who Zach Carr was?
Zach Carr was a bright guy. He was in the upper class of the school. Everybody liked Zach Carr. Everybody liked Zach Carr. He was just a guy that they liked. We lost him. It was a big jolt for us, especially the way he died. They actually executed him.
Yeah, what all do you know about where he was and what happened to him?
He was captured, and they were behind the lines. They shot him.
This was a long way from you. This was in Europe, the Battle of the Bulge. So he was captured by the Germans and executed. And how did you hear about it?
A girl from the school went over there to get the whole story on it, of how it happened and why they took his life. But Zach was on the football team. He was bright. And the kind of guy that you could get along with, he got along with all of them.
Well, here it is 75 years later, and you're telling me about him. So that indicates to me that you've probably thought about him a fair amount over all those years.
Yeah, I always did. I thought about him a lot because he was such a big player at Roosevelt. Yeah, I had the Nautilus, you know, the school book, Zach this, Zach that. He was the kind of guy you had to like. It was such a shame that he got in that predicament. It was a tremendous loss.
I'm not trying to put a thought in your head or words in your mouth, but I'm just curious, since you talked about being at the World War II Memorial and wondering, why not me? When you were there looking at all those gold stars, did you think about Zach?
Yeah, I sure did. I saw it at the Vietnam Memorial. All those people that are looking at the names. One guy was looking, and I heard someone say, "That here he is, here." They'd taken paper and they'd rub it on there. That means a lot. It was emotional for me, that trip was. I got to see all kinds of guys that did things. The veterans were proud of each other. Basically, we all felt like we really did something. So that's the way it is.
Well, I don't want to forget to say thank you. Thank you for serving our country, and thank you for telling me some of your story. Is there something that you would say that you're most proud of?
That I was in there young, and I learned to do my job there, and I think I did good. And I'm proud of it even today. I see veterans, a lot of people say thanks. The flag represents our freedom and our country. That's humanity. It's amazing how your memory leaves you at times, but there's some things it don't. And my time in the service was very important to me. I was very proud of it. I thought I did a good job, and here I am.
Yep, still going and looking forward to his 94th birthday on December 7th. Stan and his wife Jean have been married for 62 years now, and they have 15 grandchildren and 4 great-grandchildren to occupy their attention. You'll find a short video of Stan online at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. He shows us where he was on that destroyer, the USS Wedderburn. The photos you'll find there also include one of him as a baby-faced teenager. It's included in the Veterans Honor Wall at Nazareth House of Fresno, where Stan and Jean now live. And I can't conclude today without a word of gratitude for their nephew, Kerry, who passed away suddenly and unexpectedly in July. Kerry, a veteran himself, had accompanied his father and uncle to Washington, D.C. with Central Valley Honor Flight 5 years ago. He continued to volunteer for the organization after that, and for the last year or two, every time I saw Kerry, he spoke glowingly about his Uncle Stan. He said he was trying to twist his arm and get him to sit down with me and tell his story. So, Kerry, I'm sorry it took so long, but this one's for you, and we really miss you. That's our program for today. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by the U.S. Army, building a new generation of leaders at goarmy.com/warriors.